Sam.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, this is a big week.
It is.
Iowa week. Here on the Pick Six podcast.
And this ain't no 7-4 versus 8-3, baby.
Well, 5-6 versus 11-0.
That's right. But if you were going to divvy up the 15 wins, you wouldn't divvy it up 8-7. You'd go with the 11-5.
Oh, yeah.
You want the stakes. If they were going to be 15 wins combined between the two teams, you can't do much better than 11-5, yeah. Even though that makes 16.
All right, so I want to talk. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Math is hard for everyone, and it's Tuesday, and it's the morning. We're here on the Pick Six podcast. We're going to talk about six different topics like we always do, and I want to get into the Iowa rivalry and the matchup. But it's also the final game for a group of seniors. You wrote about these guys in Tuesday's paper. It's an interesting class. The thing that strikes me about it, and I thought you did a pretty good job of sort of categorizing each. I mean, there's like four, five or six different pods of where guys have come from, transfers, you know, walk-ons. It's a mixture. I call it a hodgepodge, but it's definitely a different class.
It is.
But it's missing a star, and I think that's what distinguishes it, in my mind at least. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kenny and Amir last year, Taylor before that.
Rex in
2012. Levante
in 2012.
Levante before before that. Prince and Crick, I guess.
Yep.
Sue, obviously. So it's like this class is from an on the field accomplishment standpoint. You've had guys who've, you know, sort of risen at times and then kind of descended into a little bit of on field irrelevance. And some have reemerged, and some haven't. You know, it's just like it's a weird group of guys from a on field standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Off the field, you got a lot of high character guys who've given a lot to this program and are obviously still invested because they're still here after a coaching change and you know, persevering through injury or just a lack of playing time. And
right,
But on the field, I wonder if for Nebraska fans it's tough to find a solid connection to guys, aside from Janovich and Gangwish, who are native sons, and we've kind of, I think fans have gotten to know them from a personality standpoint pretty
definitely
well.
Definitely
Jack. Yeah, Andy's maybe not
quieter.
Maybe not Andy. But
Gangwish definitely has become the face of the program this year because he's been honest and
so maybe, you know, Gangwish is the star. He's the star, but he's not. It's not from production
right.
standpoint. It's more just his
kind of the team spokesman.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
His values and viewpoints, perspective falls in lines in
right.
line with Nebraska.
Well, if you think
fans.
About it, you know, this is probably going to be Malik Collins' last year, so maybe he's the senior. He's probably playing his last game.
Probably, but he didn't probably. Like. He's not.
He's not senior.
And he's not actually. You know, it's speculation on our part. It seems
right.
that way. He's playing well enough to be a first round pick, yeah. And you know he's a guy who is working. He's a hard worker. He wants to be there. He wants to be an NFL player, but he's not. It's not like he's given that impression in the way that Randy gave it. You know, last year,
right.
Randy kind of gave it. It was almost all but assumed that he was out, whereas Malik, I mean, there's still kind of teetering, at least in my eyes.
That's fair.
He's and certainly when we ask him, when we talk to him on the record or publicly about it, he's, you know, he's saying everything he can to indicate that he's not even thinking about that.
Right. No, it's a senior class, John, that you know, has a lot of moving parts to it. The 2011 recruiting class had 20 players in it. Only 9 of those guys are left. A lot of them left before now. A couple of them graduated. Damian Stafford and Joe Carter. Bubba Starling was part of it. It has not been a class that in many ways has panned out. You know, David Santos obviously left the program or whatever happened there. Jamal Turner, who was a top 100 recruit, just never really became the player they hoped he would become. 2 4-star linemen, Ryan Reeves and Zach Starrup, struggled with injuries for years
yeah.
until now. and now they're starting. Givens Price came to the program when he was 16 years old, never really panned out, and started for a little while last year, but has basically disappeared this season. You know, and who has emerged is probably the best player of the class, as I'm kind of filing through it, as I'm looking at it now, is probably Alex Lewis, Amani Cross, and Andy Janovich. Yeah. And, you know, Cross is probably the most consistent player of the bunch. And,
well, and
Amani was always viewed as the second or third string running back until the last month of the season.
That's the thing. It's like Amani throughout his career has probably been the most consistent player, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of other guys, maybe Alex Lewis, although he came in midway through his career. Right. So it's kind of hard to make
Cockrell, I guess, maybe. You know, he started for a lot of games. But for the most part, I mean, I just think it's been sort of a very strange class, senior class, and there's just a lot of moving parts there. I think there's some recruiting failures in there. I think this program really needs, you know, if you look at the senior class, the argument about talent is legitimate.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I think some of the younger classes are talented too, especially the junior class, which has a lot of players in it. That are, you know, major contributors in this program. But you look at that senior class, there's just not a lot of contributors there. Like, there's not a lot of great players. There's probably no great players. And so I think if you look at that class, you would say, yeah, you know, talent's a little bit on the wane. There's a leadership component there. I think there's a certain vocal leadership with some of those guys, especially Jack. Kevin Williams was a senior until 3 weeks ago when he got his sixth year. So
we keep hearing players talk about Alex Lewis's leadership too,
mm-hmm.
and he's kind of shut himself off from interviews. So he used to be
a pretty good interview,
pretty good interview, and would share a lot. So he's the start of the year, the way it began with the social media.
Yeah, He's played better the last month, and I think he's cut
down on the mistakes and the penalties.
Way down.
And he's
having a better year this year than he did last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's just getting the wrong kind of notoriety this year early in the season, but that's all gone away. And hopefully, he can enjoy himself on senior day, and he can play a great game because they're going to need him. They're going to need that offensive line to protect against Iowa's defensive line. So, I mean, I think the senior class is what it is, and it's 16 guys at this point that are on scholarship, I think, 15 technically, because Kevin Williams isn't part of it. So 15 scholarship guys. Williams is going to come back. You have a huge junior class. I don't expect all the players in the junior class to return after this season. Whether Malik Collins goes to the NFL or several of those players just say, screw it, I'm leaving the program, I'm going somewhere else. I do think that by the end, you know, when we get out of this deal, whether they go to a bowl or they don't go to a bowl, I think you're going to see about 25, 26, 27, 28 spots open for the recruiting class. So you're going to see this roster turnover pretty significantly in the next year and a half, 2 years. This class will probably get forgotten, unfortunately. But it shouldn't be, because I think they kept the thing from going completely in the toilet after the Purdue game. I think the seniors really helped. And so as a result, they should be remembered and appreciated, even if they don't beat Iowa.
Right, right. It's just, I think it's difficult sometimes when, I mean, it's sort of our responsibility as reporters covering the team to tell that story, the sort of off-the-field angle or the behind-the-scenes locker room dynamic to convey that to fans. But I think fans, a lot of times, you know, their opinions are formed on Saturdays, as they should be. And so, you know, that what you talked about, the leadership component, the intangibles, just the energy that those guys can bring, and in basketball we term them as glue guys almost, you know, and that doesn't always get portrayed on Saturday if you don't make big time plays.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree with that. I mean, there's some of them are glue guys and some of them aren't. Like,
yeah.
I want to appreciate what the players said about this class. I also think that this class had a hard time over the years. I mean, there's a lot of players in this class that just did not live up to their potential. That in some ways was inconsistent. And there's a couple guys that I can think of on that group. You know, a corner and a few. They have all the talent in the world. and just haven't seized it. They haven't been mature enough, honestly, to handle their business the way it needed to be handled. And I think when you get on the back end of this class, I think you're going to say, kind of got caught in the backwash of the coaching transition, and represents to some degree some of the recruiting missteps that the previous staff made. That you just can't. Here's my point, John. They can't have another senior class like this, or they're going to go 5-6. They're going to go 5-7 or 6-6 again. They can't. This can't happen again. And that's not to knock these guys, but, you know, it's just reality. I mean, it's you got some players on there who really never, very rarely contributed.
Yeah.
One guy that never played at all was here for 3 years. So, and then you had another senior who left the program a couple of weeks ago, left the program before his senior day, whatever, who never played either. So, like, I there's just some stuff there that I just don't think that this particular class, you know, did the best it could. So you hope that the next class has maximized themselves. I do think there were some good leadership components in there, but I also think that it's come a little late in the process, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's I
it's
guess
a little
that's,
it's a little late.
I guess that's my thing is it took the team and part of it falls on other guys, not just the senior class, mm-hmm. but it took them a while, too long. It took them till the Purdue game really to have right. that realization of, oh, crap, we can't let this happen.
Right. You know? Amir and Kenny, who were the two of the seniors last year, always played with that urgency. You never had any doubt about where they were and what they felt and who they were and how they carried themselves. You never had any question.
And it helped that they were the best players, too. It helped. You know, so that's what I'm saying.
But part of who they were is what made them good. I think Amir Abdullah would tell you even to this day, there are guys that are more talented than I am, but there are guys I refuse to be outworked. And I refuse to be out-hustled or out-prepared by anybody. And I think that's part of why Amir was the player he was, because he was absolutely dedicated to the craft. And the comparison piece on this team is Malik Collins. I mean, you know, Collins doesn't have his flashiest stats because, you know, you don't get the ball as a defensive tackle. But you will not out-prepare Malik. You will not outwork him. You will not do things that you might beat him because he's not the biggest and strongest defensive tackle.
But the guy next to him might be.
he's the Amir Abdullah, and if you want to get right down to it, he's the leader of that defense as a true junior. He's the leader,
yeah.
And they all kind of look to him. And he's the guy that stays late after practice, and he's the guy that's working with the younger cats like Freedom Akamoladun and Kevin Maurice. And I'm just saying, if this is his last game, I want to acknowledge that. I don't know that it is, but if it's his last game, nice job, good effort, hell of a job by him. He was a real leader this year. I saw him working with guys for 30 minutes after practice. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to do that. And I didn't see some of the other guys doing it. So they will be losing a significant leader in Malik Collins if this is his last game. It will be a big loss on more than one front because he kept people honest.
The other thing, too, is I think he's not a guy. I know he plays a lot of as a reporter, sometimes we talk a lot about whether these guys, you know, are willing to stand up in front of a camera and answer a few questions. But there's sort of an accountability aspect that goes along with that, and also sort of a recognition of your role on the team and your desire to sort of impact perception, or your desire to alter the narrative, or at least have a say on the narrative. There's a responsibility associated with that because you are a leader on the team. Like, the team should have a voice, and you want to be that guy. And I just feel like Malik's done a pretty good job of that, even though it's not his natural, you know, he's not necessarily natural in communicating his thoughts, nor does he. I feel like he wants to do that often. But, I mean, shoot, I remember him after the Northwestern game. He had that penalty at the end. He was there with reporters talking about the play and talking about how bad of a mistake that was. He was the guy denouncing those reports about an assistant coach deliberately trying to sabotage the team.
There's a lot of decency and a lot of toughness there, and I appreciate the work he does after practice with those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, he's made those players better, and I think that's, and Imani Cross also fits into that category. Like, Imani put in the time and put in the work after practice, and whoever wanted to work with him, whether it was Adam Taylor or Mikael Wilbon or whoever, they were welcome to work with him. And I appreciate that about Imani. And I appreciate that about Malik. And I don't know, we'll just have to see. But I'm going to act like Malik's playing his last game, so I'm going to include him in that bunch. And he will be a huge loss to the program if this is his last game and he goes to the NFL draft, because, you know, he not only was a good player, but I think he was a positive impact within that locker room.
All right, so this Iowa-Nebraska quote-unquote rivalry, I feel like it is for fans. And the players, mostly just because the games have been close, I think. And it's the last game of the year, so to speak. So you always want to end the year with a positive feeling.
Right. Do you want me to tell you who I think, if you were to rank the teams that Nebraska players care about the most in the Big Ten?
Yeah.
Opinion.
Let's do it.
Michigan State's number one.
Agreed.
Wisconsin's number two.
Yes.
Iowa and Northwestern are tied for number three. This team really respects Northwestern.
Yeah.
And Northwestern snatched a few away from them. That's why. And then from there, it's whatever. But
Michigan might be next, actually.
Sure.
I don't know if it was previously. They haven't played them in a while.
Yeah.
But.
Now once they get back on playing Ohio State every year for the next 4 or 5 years, I'm assuming Ohio State will rise to that. But Ohio State will be like the crown jewel or whatever. Michigan State is the team that I think Nebraska came to identify as, you know, this is the team that we want to beat. This is the team that we respect the most. What's interesting is that Michigan State is now rotating off. Ohio State is rotating on. So I think Wisconsin and Iowa are really going to be those two teams that Nebraska looks at. And I know they respect Iowa. I know they do. Nebraska fans, as I've written before, don't want to respect anybody. They want to hold on to their respect of Oklahoma from 1985, which is, you know, or 2000, which are the last two Oklahoma national title teams. They don't want to acknowledge new teams. They didn't want to acknowledge Missouri. They didn't want to acknowledge Kansas State. They don't want to acknowledge those teams. And so the challenge that Nebraska fans have is they always have to deal with this history. The older fans do, the fans that are our age or my age in my 30s, you know, we remember Iowa as the team that we kicked the crap out of, Nebraska kicked the crap out of in 99 and 2000 when Kirk Ferentz was just getting his start. And, you know, so those are the seasons that we remember. And so I think there's a sense of like Nebraska fans do not want to respect Iowa. That's a mistake. They should. And I think if Iowa beats Nebraska on Saturday, and if they beat them handily, which is possible, let's say Iowa takes a hammer to Nebraska's helmet and just beats them in until they beat them by 21 or 24 points. What will the message be then? The message will be whatever Nebraska thinks it has been or whatever it will be, that's over. You are in deep whatever. You know, you better figure out and realize that the Big Ten's a lot tougher and a lot more whatever than you thought. Yeah. Now, if Nebraska beats Iowa on Friday, you know what people are going to say? That's right. That's just same old Iowa. They can go 11-0, but deep down we kind of know. That's just the Big Ten. When we want to turn it on, we can. This Mike Riley will get it going. Bo couldn't do it, but Mike Riley will, you know, beats Iowa. So we'll just have to see what happens. My perspective, and we've talked about this before, is that I think Nebraska's regressed to the point where it is basically the same program as every program in the Big Ten West, with the potential exception of Illinois and Purdue. But there's really no margin there. I mean, Iowa, Nebraska, Northwestern, Wisconsin, they're all the same program. Nebraska just has a bigger sense of who they are. And guess what? Do I predict Iowa will go 11-0 next year? No, I don't. I think they'll probably lose their three or four games like they usually do. I think that, you know, this year is an anomaly. But I know Nebraska fans would kill to have Iowa's record right now, too. That's the schizophrenia. Nebraska fans would love to have Iowa's record, but they refuse to concede that Iowa has done something special in achieving it. Most Nebraska fans that I know and have heard from would attribute what Iowa has done to, yeah, they're a nice team, but they also got lucky and they had a soft schedule. That's what they chalk it up to. They're lucky. And they had a soft schedule. They were playing, you know, whatever. They had to play Ohio State and Michigan. They'd lose both teams. They'd have four losses, whatever. That's the schizophrenia that Nebraska fans have to deal with.
I think the fascinating part for me is I feel like culturally Iowa fan and Nebraska fan are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's a Midwestern, two Midwestern states with I feel like the values are rooted in similar things, hard work, respect your neighbor, take pride in your community.
That's fair.
But yet on the football field, and maybe you can just literally just trace it back to the 90s, late 80s, mid 90s, when Iowa couldn't quite get over the hump. Nebraska finally defeated the villain that was Oklahoma,
right,
and won some national titles, whereas Iowa couldn't get past Ohio State and Michigan. Its best teams always lost to one of those teams and couldn't quite take the next leap.
Right.
And so Nebraska's fans got a taste of what it was like to live at college football's mountaintop, whereas Iowa was always trying to get there, and sort of set the stage of what, even though the programs and I feel like the fans are pretty similar,
right,
over the last decade or so from an on-the-field standpoint and then the way that fans just approach their lives.
You think so? I mean, Nebraska sold out a stadium more than 300 times. Iowa couldn't sell out Purdue. And they're 10-0. Nebraska's selling out, you know. They're 3-6.
That's a good point.
Here's what I would say. So most of my nuclear family grew up in Iowa. My parents, my brothers, all of my extended family grew up there. So I spent a lot of time going there as a kid, Western Iowa, which is different from Eastern Iowa. I think most people tell you that too. So I spent a lot of time, and they were all Iowa fans growing up. And so obviously I've lived in this state my whole life, and I know quite a bit about Iowa. What I would say is that the two states are different in some key ways that shapes the way that they support the football program. Part of it is that there's two universities in Iowa, and there's only one in Nebraska. What I would say is that you're right, that about 85% of Nebraska and Iowa fans are very similar in the sense of like, but that last 15%, part of which is the 90s, part of which is the 80s, when Iowa got really good and then kind of blew a couple of games in 85 when they probably should have won the national title. They were the best team, and they screwed a couple games up, and Oklahoma backdoored it, got in the back door and won it. But generally speaking, I would say there's that, but I think the differences are embedded, strangely enough, in the political process. I think that Iowa, I've long seen Iowa as a much more engaged and worldly state than Nebraska, which I have long viewed to be independent, insular, populist-minded. I don't think Iowa's nearly that way. I think part of it's because of the political process, that Iowa has long been engaged in a national conversation that Nebraska has long been left out of, politically speaking. It changes your state when every 4 years the nation comes to you.
Yeah, it centers on Iowa because right. It is so politically diverse, right, which is still puzzling to me just in that it's not necessarily ethnically diverse.
No, it's not. But it's politically
diverse. But politically it is.
It's very different, you know, in certain parts of Iowa, Eastern Iowa and Western Iowa is a little bit different. But that difference alone gives Iowa a worldliness and opens things up in a way that's really never been quite the case of Nebraska. And I think as a result, Nebraska has stayed a little bit more fixated on certain cultural totem poles, i.e. the football program.
Yeah.
Iowa can, to some degree, is in its identity in Iowa is ingrained in the fact that it is enormously important to our nation's government, future, politics, whatever you want to call it. It's important. Nebraska has never been necessarily viewed that way. And so I think that there's a certain fanaticism that comes along with Nebraska football that I think the only people in Iowa that could truly understand it would be Iowa wrestlers and Iowa wrestling fans. So what Iowa wrestling aspires to and has achieved at a better rate than any other athletic program in men's sports is what Nebraska football aspires to and desires to achieve. You know, our Nebraska's Tom Osborne is Iowa's Dan Gable. Now Gable is a far more accomplished because he won more titles, and he is a character and a personality with few peers. And Osborne is not quite that. He's sort of a reserved guy, but they accurately represent their state. And so I think it's so fascinating to me that difference between the two states and the way that they look at this. I think this game in some weird way is more important to Nebraska on Friday than is Iowa fans.
It's no question. But Nebraska always...
But that's because Nebraska's fans are so pent up in their own psyche and their own idea of who they are and how they're defined by their football team.
Oh, I know. But that's what's great about Nebraska fans, in that they view the football program as a window for, like, the nation's window into the state.
Chief cultural export. That's right.
Right. And so you got to put on a good show.
That's right.
Our football team's got to be good, because otherwise they're just going to think that we're cornfields and hay bales or something. Bingo. I don't know.
You got it, man.
Flyover country.
Now, for people who don't know, John is from Indiana.
Yeah.
So you come to this situation seeing it a little bit different than I do. But when you go to Memorial Stadium on Friday or Saturday or whatever, the whole presentation of that event is geared toward you having the best possible idea of what Nebraska is.
Right.
Did you notice the lights they put up on the east side in those suites that makes it look like classy?
I did see that.
They're cool looking at night, right?
They were.
They're all for the Michigan State game.
All you could see was shadows of people.
Yeah. I mean, the place is just, at this point, is just damn classy. I mean, the whole operation is top notch. And I think Iowa's got a great football stadium. I love Kinnick. I think it's cozy. I think it's loud. I think it, frankly, gets louder than Nebraska at times.
Well, but it's more intimidating, too, for the fans are right on top of you.
Right, on those sidelines.
On the sidelines.
It's tough. But if you look at the way Nebraska sets up its whole environment down there, it is like a 5-star hotel. Yeah. They want everybody to come in and have a great time, whether their team wins or loses. And in recent years, boy, everybody really has a good time because they come in and kick Nebraska's rear end. But the way that you just put that is that whole experience down there is geared to impress people who come to that stadium. The kindness, all of it. And I don't want to knock Nebraskans' kindness. I think it's decent, but there's some of that that really is like of a third. It's almost like a third person. It's like, I'm going to be kind because that's what Nebraska fans do.
Yeah.
Not because I really want to be kind.
Well, what's funny about that is because Nebraska fans want their program to, you know, it's obviously that's part of it. They want to be nice and they want everyone to enjoy themselves, but they also want to win, because that if they don't win, that means that they fade away off the, the relevance meter college football. So they have to win to do that.
How similar is that to Indiana basketball? Because you went to Purdue.
Yeah, I went to Purdue. I don't feel like it's defined by one school in that manner. I grew up in basically the backyard of Indiana hoops, and I've always made that comparison. I think that Indiana basketball, if you want to compare a program in the Big Ten to Nebraska football, I think Indiana basketball is the best comparison.
Okay.
But I feel like while the culture of basketball in Indiana sort of centers around the Hoosiers and the university, it kind of goes beyond that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's
well, because Notre Dame's there. You know,
and the high school scene is kind of what made the story more so than Bob Knight and what they did in college. I mean, that amplified it a little bit and drew more eyes to it. But I think.
And that's not true here.
Yeah, exactly.
Having lived here now, you can admit that the Nebraska high school basketball tournament is a bigger deal than the football state championships.
Yeah.
It is. And there's a going on right now. The high school basketball tournament is a bigger deal. High school basketball in this state is a bigger deal than high school football. Nebraska football truly is its own entity, and they recruit from all over the country, and it's almost like a corporation. It's almost like a company that's stationed in Lincoln, and its job is to be the steward of Nebraska's culture.
Right. And I guess
the worldwide brand.
What I enjoyed Dirk's mad chatter the other week ago about you know, comparing Iowa and Nebraska, sort of the expectations, it plays right into our discussion, because Nebraska fans, because they want to win so bad and they feel like it's necessary.
Here's the one thing about
Dirk's. They're ambitious, and
right.
Whereas Iowa fans are kind of content, but go on.
The one thing I would say about Dirk's contention, because he was saying it's like two guys going after the same girl. I don't think they're going after the same girl. I don't. I mean, I really don't think they are. I think Nebraska is going after a girl that may or may not actually exist. And even if she does exist, they would look upon that girl and imbue her with traits that she may not have. Truly.
And probably like, still want more. I feel like
Nebraska football is Jay Gatsby. I mean, deep down, when you get right down to it, if you look at the way that Nebraska football was built over those years, Nebraska football is Jay Gatsby. It is in the pursuit of something that isn't, that is almost like it's a kind of aristocracy that's hard to define. The difference being that, you know, Nebraska got to the top, and for a very short period of time, it was the king of college football. And I remember that. I was in high school, and it was like my first couple of years of college. So I remember it really well. And it's just, I think that feeling, they're chasing the feeling of love. They're not chasing a person. They're chasing that initial brilliant high that they had in the early 90s. And they keep filling that stadium with the expectation that one day it's going to come back. Okay. And I think I was really chasing a real girl, right? Like, and Dirk's analogy was good in the sense he's like, they're both going after, you know, Nebraska keeps going for unattainable girls and Iowa keeps going. I would agree with the sense that it is unattainable, but I don't even think it's a person. I think it's just it's a feeling, like in The Great Gatsby, the feeling that Gatsby had evoked in him didn't have that much to do with the human being. It had to do with the moment. And I think that's where Nebraska's at. The question becomes, and this is all outside of the actual game itself, the question becomes, what happens with the actual football game?
Exactly. What do you think the biggest key is? For Nebraska to pull off the win, the upset, what do you think the biggest key?
I think it's both big and small. So from a big picture sense, it's getting yourself in manageable downs. And, you know, trying to beat Iowa at its own game.
Which is tough.
Which is to be efficient.
Nebraska basically set the blueprint of how not to play Iowa 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Turnovers, sacks, negative yardage. The field position was totally in Iowa's favor. Mm-hmm. The fake punt that didn't work, you know.
Oh, God. The worst call of Bo Pelini's tenure.
But that game, if you go back and watch it, it's the how not to play Iowa game.
Yeah.
This is exactly what you do not do against Iowa.
They got a better quarterback today than they did.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, the circumstances.
Ron Kelly couldn't run.
Circumstances are different. Yeah. Iowa eventually just started blitzing the heck out of them, which is weird to see Iowa do that.
Yeah.
Like every
down. That was a rough game. I mean, Nebraska, I think Nebraska's offense, defense only gave up like 300 yards and it got totally outclassed. Yeah. So I think part of it's that, and then I think part of it is quarterback play. If you can find a way to get Tommy to make his big plays and C.J. Beathard doesn't make his C.J. Beathard plays,
Yeah, I think that's it.
I think that's one of the big keys. Iowa's going to get third down, and they just Nebraska's got to make sure Iowa doesn't convert them.
Yeah, it's for me, it's on offense, Nebraska's got to get some big plays, mm-hmm. which is tough to do against Iowa, especially in the running game. And then on the other side, third down, C.J. Beathard scrambling or just making something out of nothing. Extending plays, finding a tight end for 6 yards when they need four, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And forcing Iowa out of its comfort zone a little bit. I mean, it would be huge if Nebraska was up 14-0.
Iowa's easier like said than done, New England Patriots is situational football. They're great at situational football. They understand down and distance. They understand where to go. They understand all that stuff. They're really good at it.
When I was watching the Iowa-Purdue game, which is really the first – I mean, I've watched snippets of Iowa all year, but that was the first time I've actually sat down and watched them. It just seemed like it had a great handle on the feel of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, when it felt like Purdue had a chance to make a run, I think they faked a punt and drove down. You know, the defense came up with a big stop. When it was 20-13, I was offense put together a great drive. Beathard had a couple good scrambles, and they went up by two scores. I mean, it's just the, you know, it's almost like a point guard in basketball knowing that a run's about to come, and he puts it upon himself to drive to the lane and get a bucket.
You nailed it.
That's like what Iowa's is as a team, the collective team. That's what they do.
If
that's
any Iowa fans listen to this, I hope you understand how much we appreciate how good of a team they are. They truly are a good team.
I was watching the Patriots last night. I was like, that's Iowa without Brady. I mean, Brady is Brady. He's amazing. But just generally speaking, New England finding a way to beat a Buffalo team that with all the injuries that New England has and you know, it doesn't fully make sense, but yet they were in control of that entire game. And at the end, even though Buffalo had the ball back with down needing only a score, there was no chance. They were driving down the field to win that game.
Right.
And so it's just like, yeah, I tons of respect for Iowa, what they've done. That team is it's like the perfectly melded, shaped team.
Right. It's the team that Nebraska would like to be if only Iowa weren't the team.
Right.
I mean, there's no doubt about that. It's tough because people in Nebraska see Iowa as a program that shouldn't be doing what they're doing. And people in Nebraska will attribute what Iowa is doing to luck. And I don't really think it is. But people will say, if Iowa makes the playoff with those recruiting rankings and with that track record of losing, you know, 4-8 in 2012, 8-5 in 2013, and 7-6 in 2014, people will attribute it to a fluke.
Did you make that comparison or that sort of connection that the recruiting ranking world of college football is on Nebraska's side on Friday?
I think they are. I think all of college football is on Nebraska's side.
The SEC is on Nebraska's side.
Everyone is.
Nobody wants to see what Iowa's accomplished actually work.
That's right. I genuinely believe that what Iowa's doing right now
debunks the theory of modern
is a problem
football.
For a lot of people who make a lot of money off college football. Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And that's one of the fun things about this game is that, and again, Iowa fans will hear this and they'll think I'm knocking Iowa. No, I'm saying they are the fly in the ointment. There are a lot of people who would just as soon Iowa lost it out. I've heard people say this. Can Iowa please lose so that a playoff spot is not wasted on them? Because they will just go to the playoff and they will just lose. Let's not waste a spot on them. We want, you know, that's why you're hearing Oklahoma, you know, well, Oklahoma would be ahead of Iowa this week. Okay. Why? Because they're named Oklahoma? I don't know. But what Iowa is doing right now is really not a story anybody really wants to tell. It runs counter the way our culture works today. Our culture tells us you must have the best of everything. You must recruit in the South. You must have these certain star athletes. Do you realize how many recruiting people are going to have to go back and rewrite everything that they've written if Iowa does this?
Yeah.
Because then you're going to be able to say, and then you know what they'll say if that does happen? Well, Iowa was just a fluke anyway. What difference does it make? It's just a fluke. So we don't.
Which might be partly true.
It might be partly true. But don't you realize that no one really wants to say that?
Yeah.
Most people who make a lot of money off of college football and just writing or analyzing or whatever would just as soon Nebraska kicked Iowa's ass on Friday. That's absolutely true, because then it would end any discussion of Iowa being deserving of being in the college football playoff. And deep down, that's what a lot of people want to be true. They would accept it of Nebraska because Nebraska has a history of winning national championships. They'd say, well, look at that. Nebraska's back. They'd accept Nebraska. They reject Iowa. And it's not fair. It's not fair. But that's exactly what they would do. 2 years ago, everybody wanted to see Kirk Ferentz fired. They said he had the worst contract in college football, that he didn't know what he was doing. And you want to know something? The people who said that hadn't probably attended an Iowa game in 5 years, if that.
Well, most of the people who have talked about Iowa this year probably haven't even watched
That's
Iowa.
That's right. We live in a world of clickbait and of internet traffic and all this other junk. And the general prevailing theme is we don't want to have to cover a game with Iowa. We don't want to have to do that. We would just as soon go back to Alabama and talk to Nick Saban about the same stinking six things that we always talk to him about. Or we just as soon Kevin Sumlin had a 12-0 team so we could talk about how cool he is and how well he recruits. Or we just as soon have Jimbo Fisher do it. Or we just as soon have Dabo Swinney be that guy because he's fun and he lives in the South. Or we just as soon USC do it with Clay Helton so we can say USC is back. They just as soon not have it be Iowa. And if it were any other team but Iowa, Nebraska would be on Iowa's side. But it's Iowa, and Nebraska has to play them, right. And Nebraska dearly wants to beat this team because they can, I don't think they can handle or they can. It will be so hard for Nebraska fans to understand how Iowa, a team they lost to last year, could come in and be undefeated and beat them this year. Nebraska fans will have a horrible offseason if that happens. So that's sort of the psychic stakes at play. And it's fascinating, isn't it?
It's awesome. Well, do you think if Iowa loses on Friday but then goes and beats Michigan State, is Iowa in the playoff?
No. No.
Should Iowa be in the playoff?
Yes.
As the Big Ten champion with a win over Michigan State, maybe?
I want to be fair.
We got to see who else.
We
got to
see how the game would turn out on Friday. I mean, in my opinion, Alabama's the best team in the country. Clemson's up there, although I don't think Clemson's played very good teams. I think Notre Dame is flip a coin with Iowa. Notre Dame and Iowa seem very similar to me. And I think Oklahoma and Michigan State are good teams too. So, but if Iowa goes and beats Michigan State and finishes 12-1, and you're going to match them up with who? At that point, there'd only be one undefeated team in Clemson. I'll take Alabama over Iowa. I don't know about Notre Dame. I don't know about Oklahoma. I'd take Baylor over Iowa because I think Baylor's probably better than all those teams. They just had a crappy game against OU.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, I mean, I think it's a coin flip. So Iowa would belong in the playoff. If they got in, you'd be like, that's fine. But I know how the media works, and I know that so many people are aligned against Iowa, and I feel bad for them. You almost kind of wish the game had happened earlier in the year when Nebraska was on its slide and whatever happened, and Iowa could just go and finish this thing out. That's not how it's going to play out. So one of the biggest games in Iowa history is an opportunity for Nebraska to reassert its snobbery. And, of course, the players don't know any of this.
Yeah, they're just out there playing.
They're oblivious to all this. Right. But the fans walk in there with that. Do I think the players of Nebraska can beat Iowa? Yeah. But I still favor Iowa.
Yeah, I think Iowa wins by a field goal.
So you think Iowa wins the game?
I do.
Okay.
I do. For Nebraska to beat Iowa, I think what you said – when we just talked about the keys of the game, Nebraska's going to have to beat Iowa at its own game. Mm-hmm. It's going to have to win field position. It's going to have to not turn the ball over. It's going to have to play sound situational football, limit its mistakes. These are things that Nebraska struggled with all season.
That's right.
It's kind of won. The games that it's won in spite of that. Just made some heroic plays, and maybe Nebraska can put together 8 or 9 spectacular plays and pull off an upset, but I just don't think that's going to happen.
Right.
Thanksgiving happens before the game, obviously. I wanted to get to your what is your eating strategy?
Well, I'm fat, so I eat a lot.
So you just go for all of it.
Let's see. Turkey's all right. It's not my favorite thing in the world, so I'll get a little bit of turkey. I try to create bites with multiple things in it.
That's my go-to do as well.
So a little
bit of mashed potatoes, a little stuffing, a little turkey, maybe a little dash of cranberry sauce.
Right. And I like cheap cranberry sauce, and I like expensive cranberry sauce. It doesn't really matter to me. I will eat both. I enjoy both. So I will go with the gelatinous
That's the underrated part about
slab.
Thanksgiving. That's the underrated part about Thanksgiving is the multi-food bite. Like, they should make a special Thanksgiving fork. That it's just that kind of it's kind of maybe it's a spork, I don't know, but bigger, so you could just fill up just with more items and just stuff your mouth. You know what I'm saying? Like, there needs to be a bigger fork apparatus.
I would say a square fork.
Square, yeah.
a squirk.
Yeah.
So like,
so it's just like a mini plate almost that you just stuff in your mouth?
Like a mini rectangular fork that has sort of an indentation in it. So it's kind of like a shovel.
Yeah.
It's a Thanksgiving mini shovel.
That's perfect.
And you can kind of scoop and eat.
That's perfect. That's exactly
now,
what I want.
For what it's worth, you could not use that on pumpkin pie because that'd just be way too much pumpkin in your mouth at one time.
Right.
Like if you used that on pumpkin and you stuffed your mouth full of creamy pumpkin and whipped cream,
yeah.
You'd be like, "What the hell did I just do?
Right.
My mouth is going to seize up." What's your favorite pie?
Oh, pumpkin.
Pumpkin.
We've had this conversation. You like pecan.
Yep. Pecan pie is my favorite. Yes. But I don't mind apple. I don't mind cherry.
At your Thanksgiving, do you have an assortment of pies?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. My mom, so we're going to go to my parents' house, I think. We'll have pumpkin, chocolate pie.
Oh, that's good. That sounds amazing.
And I'm hoping pecan. But I don't know.
Yeah.
But if they don't have pecan pie, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go buy a slice somewhere, at a restaurant or something.
There you go.
Eat it before the Nebraska Iowa
game. There's not enough pie places in my mind. Maybe I just haven't found them yet. Maybe when I'm like 60 years old and I have nothing to do, I'll just go.
There's a couple
pie
in
places.
Lincoln. I don't know. I mean, Omaha is such a foodie town that maybe pie is not, you know,
high priority.
Culinary enough for y'all. I mean, I know how you guys roll, you know. I mean, I wouldn't want to. I mean, it may not fit. Can you put a gastrique on a pie? I don't know. Yeah. Can you?
Yeah,
this is apple pie.
Omaha's pie
with a cheese gastrique on top. What's a gastrique? Yeah. Just foam. It's just foam. This is liquid, but they call it a gastrique.
Okay,
it's a gastrique. Can you imagine that?
It's almost like Omaha would have to be, It something has to be cool about the pie. Like it's got to be shaped as a sphere or something like that. It's a pie ball or something. Football,
yeah, that's about right.
I mean, I don't know.
No, you're right. It should be like a sphere, and it should be like in an installation, like on a stand that was artfully made, and then you like slice pieces of it off. Yeah. Right. So my Thanksgiving strategy is a little bit of turkey, a little bit of stuffing, mashed potatoes, a little bit of cranberry sauce. That's probably the long. Sweet potatoes. I love sweet potatoes.
Same here, man. That's my go-to. That's my go-to.
I'll eat a lot of sweet potatoes.
Get thirds. Always get thirds on sweet potatoes.
Yeah. So I don't actually eat mashed potatoes. I eat sweet potatoes. And so sometimes I'll eat the turkey and the sweet potato at the same time. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's good.
Let's make some picks real quick before we get out of here. Navy Houston, who you got?
I'm taking Navy.
Navy hasn't gotten enough love, but I'm taking Houston. Baylor, TCU.
Baylor.
Baylor as well. Ohio State, Michigan.
Michigan.
I got Ohio State bouncing back. It's crazy.
Come on, John.
It's a dumpster fire.
They're
but
done.
They're going to find a way.
Let me tell you, I'm hoping Michigan. I don't like either team. I like Ohio State more than Michigan. I'm hoping Michigan puts them in a hurt locker.
It really could happen.
Oh, man. I hope Harbaugh, I hope he sticks his Harbaugh hat right on their rear end. I mean, I hope it's like 48-3. I hope it's like 23-6, and Ohio State has about 104 yards, and Michigan only has about 345, but they control the ball for 41 minutes, and they just beat them into submission. And then you've got to see Urban Meyer go, well, you know, I point the finger right here. I think I might have to take a different job now.
You knew at some point there would be a sort of an explosion of just, I mean, it would just get decimated, right? Yeah. Like, that's what's there. Happened. It happened at Florida, and
if they lose to Michigan, it to happen it's going to be because you know Jim Harbaugh is such a like unique human being, and there aren't degrees of uniqueness, but he truly is unique. That he won't even give to the moment. Like if they win and they beat Ohio State 23-6, he'll go over to Urban Meyer and he won't like hug him or like great game, Urban. He'll be like, how you doing? Good game. And then he'll go into the post game and he'll just be as spacey as usual. Yeah, yeah. Great game. Hope Michigan State loses. Yeah. Okay. Like, he won't even acknowledge the stakes, which will piss Ohio State fans off even more.
Probably.
He'll act like it's
Didn't
no
matter.
No big deal.
That's
what I like about the guy.
Florida State, Florida?
Florida State.
Same here.
God, please be Florida.
Notre Dame, Stanford.
Come on. I mean, who roots for Florida? Does anyone?
I don't know.
They have great uniforms. I'll give them major props. That orange top, woo, Kerwin Bell. But who roots for Florida? Does anybody? What was the next one?
Notre Dame, Stanford.
Notre Dame.
I got Stanford.
My wife's team. She likes Notre Dame.
Oklahoma.
I live with an Irish fan.
Bedlam. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma by 3 or 4 touchdowns.
I got OU as well.
Yeah.
Sam, thanks for your time, man.
Thank you.
Good pick six. We'll be back. I don't know when. Sometime in December we'll break down. We're going to do a season recap and then maybe preview the bowls. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll be back maybe if they play in a bowl. God, I hope it's not December 26th.
I hope it's not Detroit, which is like
Detroit is December 29th. I'll take that over December 26th. Who wants to go on the day after Christmas to the Foster Farms Bowl? San Francisco.
Man. San Fran.
You want to spend Christmas
New York,
in San Francisco?
Or New York? I could do either.
I don't want to spend Christmas in New York. I just went there for 3 weeks ago. San Francisco.
I was only there for 6 hours. This isn't good enough taste. I don't know. We'll be back, and we'll talk about it.
See you.